From 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, it's The Bill. Conversations with entrepreneurs and innovators about their dreams, their triumphs, and their challenges.
Dreams. Most of us have trouble remembering what we dreamed about after we wake up each morning. But by the time you're brewing your morning coffee, everything that happened in your mind's eye the night before turns into a fog. And sadly, we often treat our real-life dreams the same way. We think we know what we want to do with our lives or how we want to spend our time, but we let work, anxiety, or fear get in the way. Some of us are so caught up in a daily treadmill of expectations and obligations that we don't even know if we have bigger dreams. Austin Haynes decided to make discovering those real-life dreams his life's work. As a speaker and coach, he's helping clients uncover their true passions and building action plans that lead to significant goals. His dream? To impact the lives of at least 10,000 more people. It's the story of Free Will Dream, coming up next on The Build.
The Build is made possible with support from 2820 Press, providing business consulting and content strategy services to customer-obsessed companies nationwide. More information at 2820press.com.
It's The Build. I'm Joe Taylor Jr., joined today by Austin Haynes, founder of Free Will Dream. Welcome.
Great to be here, Joe. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time.
Excellent. So I understand that you began kind of taking a look at how we live our lives and really choose whether or not we're going to pursue our dreams all the way back to when you were a kid.
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about that experience and how it informed where you are today and how you put together your company.
Well, the truth, Joe, is that I didn't really have a dream and I never believed it was possible for me, which I think most people will identify with. When you think about a dream, it's often talked about as being outside of the realm of what's possible, something far in the future, outside of our reach. As a result, most people think about a dream, but very few really go after and pursue it. And for me, coming from my background, which maybe we'll get into today, just I had a really tough upbringing and I never believed something bigger was possible for me. I was always thinking that other people had more than me. They were ahead of me, and I was down here trying to figure it out because I had less at the time. Through that journey in my life, I finally realized, I came to the realization, which hopefully we'll get in today, and Free Will Dream was born to overcome that challenge for myself and the people that I'm gonna, that I have been impacting and the people that I will impact.
What do you think are some of the limiting factors? Why, when you say that we may not realize that we even have a dream, what's causing us to fail to imagine what the future could be for ourselves?
Joe, that's a great question. It's a great question. And there's a lot of factors, but the one thing I can think that people will relate to is the treadmill of life or the wheel. We've all heard of the wheel. We're all on like hamsters on the wheel. And we tend to get into this mode where we one day repeats itself. And there's research that says that 98% of your thoughts that you had yesterday will repeat themselves again today. And there's research that also says that 80% of those thoughts are of a negative nature. What does that tell us? Well, that tells us that people are repeating the same day over and over again. And if you watch, do we have to look at the news to see the, if you look at the debate, we know that's mostly a negative campaign. The news is negative. We are bombarded with negative information constantly from the time we grow up to the time we get older. Hence, 80% of our thoughts are negative. We're always thinking that we're not good enough. We can't get there. There's a limiting factor. We have to know. And the other key thing, which I'm just going to hit on here, is we think we have to know all the answers because we're grown. When we grow up, we have to go to school. We got to get a good job. We got to know all the answers. And those factors prevent people from truly taking the risk to go after it because they don't believe it and they think they have to have all the answers.
So talking to entrepreneurs a lot in my job and the role on the show here as well, I end up talking to a lot of folks who are probably less risk averse than average. But what causes us to get into that place where we don't even want to try something new, or we just allow ourselves to feel that? Does it feel comfortable for us to just repeat that mantra of negativity?
Yes, there's a factor when I go through my program when I take people through it. I take them through the six human needs, and one of the human needs is certainty or security. Over time, as we get older, we develop this high need for certainty and security. And that's okay. You can live a life where you seek certainty as your primary need. And that's a life that leads to satisfaction, but it does not lead to fulfillment. When you speak about entrepreneurs, they are typically the opposite. They have a high need for variety and growth. And those needs that drive their life overcome the risk factor. It overcomes that I have to know all the answers, and what if I fail? Entrepreneurs become immune to that. If not initially, the longer they're an entrepreneur, the longer they're going to build up that immunity to that, I got to know all the answers and I got to look good. And they go after it.
So tell me a little bit more about the distinction between satisfaction and fulfillment. For some folks, they probably on the surface seem or sound a little bit the same, but I hear you making a big distinction there.
Right. And if you think about satisfaction, it's I'm satisfied. And I think if we went out and we talked to people, we said, are you satisfied? A lot of people would say, I'm satisfied. I have enough money. I have a good job. Things in my life are good. But then if you ask them if they're fulfilled, I think there's a quite distinction there. For some people, it may be larger than others, but there's definitely a distinction there. And most people want to be fulfilled. And I believe, other than a relationship, the next way to be fulfilled is to know that you're living out your highest life's purpose. You're giving your gifts to the world. And I think that's the road that leads to fulfillment. And really, free will dream's a sexy way of saying your life's purpose or your true highest aspiration.
So let's say that someone listening to the show right now is feeling like they're on that hamster wheel. They're just going through the motions day to day. How do they even start to identify what that dream even is?
That's a great question. That's why I created this program, number one. I found myself, and there's six stages of a dream, you know, your life dream. I found myself in what's called passive discovery, which means I knew something wasn't right. I felt that internal guide, that compass that said something's not right. And as a result, I tried these different things and I thought it was money. I tried these different opportunities and I never could get the traction that I wanted. And then I realized that there was a deeper calling that I had been ignoring. It was covered up. But through that passive discovery, it just took me longer. You follow me? That passive discovery took me a longer time frame to get to this point. What I do with people is I say, let's get into active discovery. Let's start to really sit down. If your boss came to you and said, I need this report on my desk Monday or you're fired, you'd work all weekend, night and day to get that report done. But when it comes to our own things, we just put them in the closet. We stuff them aside in the pursuit of money or some other aspiration that's not attuned to our highest aspiration.
So how do you start to help folks build that sense of self-accountability? How do you make sure that that same signal of I'm going to work on myself or I'm going to work on the business instead of in the business, how does that become priority one when you've got a boss, a client, a spouse, everybody else is filling your inbox, filling your voicemail with things that you need to do? How do you help clients carve out that time and attention for this?
Joe, that's a great question as well. And that's another thing that people come up. Everybody has a busy life. They may have a family, they're working, they need to make money. We all need to make money to survive. There's a quote by Jim Rohn, it says, reasons come first and answers come second. And again, it points to the fact what I said earlier, you don't have to know all the answers. You don't have to figure it all out right up front. But if your reasons are strong enough, the road becomes more visible or clear. And so what I do with people is I help them develop those reasons. What are those internal reasons? Why do you want something like this? And you may not know what it is in the front, but you may start with a feeling. There's a feeling that I am meant to do more. There's something more for me to do. And you don't have to know it, but you know there's a feeling there. Sometimes that feeling is a strong enough reason, but I take that and develop reasons around that. And I basically, in my program, I have people list out 21 reasons why. And it's amazing. And we identify the top six. And I've had people say, well, why do I have to write down 21 reasons? I already know. But I've been doing this for a while. And I had people that actually went through that process. And what I found is some of their top reasons were like in the last like 18, 19, 20. Because again, your brain, remember your brain I said about the thoughts? So if you're continually thinking those thoughts, you have to escape from that to go a little bit deeper. And that's what I do to get people to get those reasons. And once those reasons are carved out, then we put a plan behind it. We carve out time. And you know, you've been talking to entrepreneurs a long time. A poor plan that's consistently acted upon is better than a master plan that just sits on the shelf.
Well, I think that a lot of the things that I'm seeing there, I love sometimes that there's a collective subconscious that puts a lot of things out in the universe. And I hear a lot lately about the idea of getting something on a streak, whatever it is that you're trying to do. If you're trying to make a big change, just don't worry about losing 50 pounds in 50 weeks. Just worry about getting to the gym once a day for 21 days. So what are some of the behavioral changes? What are some of the things that you notice clients start to adopt as new routines to kick out some of the old behaviors?
I think that's different for everybody. And when you get people, what happens really when I work with people is the belief opens up. I really see, you can see people's, almost their body changes, physiology, their change just happens because they start to believe again. And when they start to believe again, and this is the key thing, the actions become clear. You may not know what it is right now, but what happens is, I always say, internal inspiration that leads to action will largely overcome external motivation that is, you know, is forced from without, motivation that is forced from without. And we grow up with motivation, external motivation, but that internal inspiration, you will know, and you will know what the next logical step is. And that's what I work with people and say, what's the next logical step? And just like you're saying, if you start simple, and simple is what's the next logical step? You take that step, what's the next logical step? It sounds very basic and rudimentary, but when you're dealing with complex brains who want to see the entire road in advance of taking the step, it's people forget the next logical step. And I always say, what's more important, the first step or the last step when you hit the finish line? And people, I get a range of answers. Oh, it's the first one. No, it's when you hit the finish line. The truth is, I don't know. But I know that they're both important. And if you can get people taking that first step and then they can see further, the next step becomes clear. And I'm not trying to minimize the value of having a business plan, because what I do with people, that the last step is we create a plan. But the plan is just a track to run on, because I know the plan changes day one. I mean, Richard Branson, one of the greatest business minds, he doesn't believe in these long, extensive business model or plans. He has a plan, but it's not in the traditional context of what people think it should be. The point is, if you have the track, you get into action, more resources will become available as you go.
So, and Richard Branson, I think, is a great example, because that's someone who pretty much changed industries a couple of times along the way until he became known for hopping industries every couple of years, basically. He starts in publishing, gets into music, gets into airplanes,
right,
gets into tourism, gets into money,
right,
you know, and now he's just got this portfolio of stuff.
Right.
But the only consistent thing is him showing up and doing wild things to try and motivate his people. So I think that brings me, it's a good segue into another area for us to explore, is when you're working with folks who are leaders or in leadership roles or who aspire to be leaders, what are some of the changes that you start to see in terms of how they operate their organizations or how they step into roles where they're actually trying to inspire others?
That's another great question, Joe. I primarily work with people who are in their day job. As far as working with high-level entrepreneurs, mostly high-level entrepreneurs, they're already en route. They already have a lot of the fundamentals that I work with. I certainly can work with entrepreneurs to help them get clearer. But in the folks that I've worked with, there's just a quality that they have that I think, correlating my work to that, I think I just help them tap into that at a deeper level. It's like they already have it going. They don't need an overhaul. they just need a tweak. Like even the greatest minds, greatest people, we all need a coach or a mentor or somebody to help us. And there's that third party that can look in. And I think for those type of people, the ones that I've worked with, they typically just need a little tweak here and there. And because they already have the quality. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but
Yeah. And to go a little bit deeper on that, what I want to know is, as you're developing this dream of yours into its own business, into a livelihood for yourself, how are you discovering the kinds of clients that are ideal for you to work with?
Typically, people who are at a level of success in their life. And we talked about it earlier, but there's a feeling that there's more. There's something missing. They can't quite put their finger on it. My ideal client would be that person, age relative, maybe they fall into an age bracket, but there's a level of success that they've achieved and they know that there's more and they don't believe it can happen. Maybe they have a family like we talked about. Can they stop what they're doing and start a new thing? Or how do they do it? How do they create it? What is it? All these questions. That would be my ideal client, that person that aspires to more. I could work with that person and really help them uncover what it is for them. Because a lot of people have been living out according to what they think they're supposed to do. And it sounds cliche, but that it's amazing when you talk to people and the jobs that they're in and the things that they're doing. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this earlier, but according to Reuters.com, only 14% of the people out there, we looked in Philadelphia alone, only 14% are doing work or a job that they absolutely love. That means 86% of the people out there are not happy or they're just existing. And there's a percentage of them that are plotting their escape. They're looking to get into that next thing. There's a huge market out there. So I really could work with anybody, but that person who's missing, they feel like something's missing and they want more would be my ideal client.
Well, I think it comes back to some of the cultural norms we have, especially in America. The first is the idea of that there's a very distinct wall between work and leisure. I've also had conversations with folks over the years when I've been in leadership roles or when I've started companies about the idea of, personally, I don't know that there's such a thing as a work-life balance because that implies that you have to figure out that there's a scale and you put some things in one and some things in the other. I'm more of a fan of the phrase work-life fit, that all these things kind of pull together. But I encounter a lot of folks that think, okay, from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m., I belong to someone else. I belong to the job, my boss, some other thing. And my time begins at 5:01. And it strikes me that that could be a toxic way to try to live. Do you encounter that with
Yes.
some of the folks that you
and
take
let me
on?
Let me just say this up front. The work-life balance to me is a myth. If you want to go to pursue a dream, or you're an entrepreneur, balance is a myth. A lot of these people will say, oh, we're going to look at the balance. And hear me out on this. When you go to start a business, there's no such thing as balance out of the gate. And with my program, I look at 90 days where once we get through this, you're going to go 90 days all out massive action. And I liken it to a rocket ship. A rocket ship takes 80% of its energy and fuel to get off the pad into orbit. And then it only takes 20% to keep it in orbit. It's the same thing with a business. When you are starting something, there is a period where you have to go all in, all out. I mean, you're still working, but there's going to be a period where you're out of balance. And you can determine what that period is. I use 90 days. So after the 90 days, you're going to recalibrate, retool. You're going to get some things back in balance. If you have a family, you're going to go celebrate with them, whatever your progress was. You're going to get them along the journey so they're involved. They don't feel resentment because you're working so hard. And there's a whole strategy to do this. So that work-life balance thing, yeah, it is something that once you get the business going, but out of the gate, the balance really, you can't expect to have balance. And I think a lot of people get frustrated with that because they think I'm out of balance when I'm trying to get balance. Again, that's that certainty. that kicks in. So,
well, I think it also comes from another cultural norm in America, as in many developed countries, where you start to ask kids when they're 13, 14, 15, what do you want to do when you grow up? And you ask a 17-year-old undergraduate student to pick a major and say, this is what you're going to do, if not be, for the rest of your life.
Right.
And most of the folks I know undergo significant change from the period of 17 to 21, 21 to 25. Is it fair to expect that we're going to want the same things when we're 50 that we wanted when we're 17?
No, it's a great point, Joe. This is a dynamic process. When you establish your dream, you act as if it's the only one. But we know it's not. Things are going to evolve. There's other dreams that fall in line. Which is the most important dream for me? Should it be this? Should it be this? I believe there's one that's a driver, one that's like a focal point. And then a lot of times when you go after that dream and you start to realize it at some level, all these other dreams kind of fall in line, like all the butterflies start to fly in formation. But it's a very dynamic process and it changes. What you think today, it's almost like you take your 25-year-old mind, what you thought was important, and you move it 20 years later, it's a lot different. Your priorities change. What you value changes. So will your dream and so will your aspirations.
One of the things I observe when I see folks go through major transformations in their lives, they usually can only do that with support from a tight network, spouse, family, friends. But I also see resistance. I'm a fan of the author Stephen Pressfield, who writes about this quite a bit.
Yes.
And the idea that there are people in your life who are going to only view you one way, that may not understand your dream or your desire to transform. So how do you equip your clients with the ability to either walk their close loved ones and their network of friends and family through this transformation or make some difficult decisions about reevaluating those relationships?
Right. As far as the family unit or your loved ones, this by all means is a team effort. And I think if you look at any successful entrepreneur, they'll say, thank you to my wife, my family, who believed in me. And that's a key thing. And you, whatever you're doing, that's the first relationship. Your spouse, your significant other, they need to be on board with what you're doing. They need to be a part of what you're doing. That's first and foremost. As far as the toxic or people that are going to be resistant, I love those people too. Because they're the people that fire you up. And if you're an entrepreneur, guess what? There's a phrase that says the key to success is massive rejection. And I think every entrepreneur needs to get to a place where rejection excites them. And that's an interesting thing to think about. But I actually get excited about rejection. I've gotten to that point, especially growing up, you know, just thinking that everything was wrong, getting rejected, and just feeling like, again, like I lack something from the time I was younger, coming from a divorced family, and seeds were planted then, dealing with that rejection. But I'm at the place now where it's all of value to me. And I think that those people, you value those people too, because those people can teach you a lot if you're open to what they have to say.
And along those lines, there's, I think, a huge distinction between what I observe when I'm out on the West Coast versus what I see on the East Coast. We're in Philadelphia right now. We're taping this episode about a block away from Independence Hall, where an entire country was founded on a set of dreams and ideals that were radical and revolutionary at the time. And yet, to some degree, the consistent belief on the East Coast is that we strive for structure, stability. We crave that thing that we don't see very often, which is let's go into the same job for 40 years and retire with a pension. Mm-hmm. Whereas Silicon Valley, you hear the mantra of fail fast, break things, try again. How do you start to bring some of that feeling of security and failure to folks on the East Coast, but that might be a little bit more entrenched in the idea of you do one thing and that's it for the rest of your life?
That's a great question. And before we go forward, it's no accident that we are in Philadelphia, where freedom first rang, on the celebration of Martin Luther King, which is famous I Have a Dream speech that resonated. So this is kind of an interesting scenario. But to your point about the security versus the risk, it goes back to the reasons. People will avoid pain. There's a philosophy that people will do more to avoid pain than they will to gain pleasure. And this might go a little deep for this conversation, but it's the truth is that when the pain of not pursuing your highest aspiration is greater than the pain of working at your job, that's when things start to kick in, I believe. That's part of that that motivation. But from that can be fueled the inspiration. And I think that people need to look at the big picture. There's a, you know, if you're in a corporate job, you're a big company, you always look at the 100,000 foot view to see everything. We need to do that with our lives. We need to do that. We need to step out, get in a helicopter, climb the tree, look over the landscape. Where am I going here? Am I going to be regretful if I don't take a chance now? Or am I okay? Am I happy where I'm at? And that question's different for everybody. But I think the entrepreneurs, you're talking about West Coast versus East Coast. And it's interesting, not to get too deep here, but if you think about going back in time, a lot of people went out West, what, the gold rush? There was always that element of risk to go out West and to pursue new land and to pursue new opportunity. So maybe it still exists today in some level.
Ties back through centuries, really, right?
Really.
But it's a great metaphor for right. what happens when folks actually travel out and then in some ways cycle back to the East Coast and start new things or, mm-hmm. or bring ideas back to them. I'm curious, though, when you're beginning to work with a client or you're identifying someone that may want to come into one of your programs, what's the first big measurable piece of success that you look for? What's the first thing that shows them and you that this person's gonna make it? They're on the right path.
I do a questionnaire first. I do like an intake questionnaire and I have a conversation with them because I don't want to work with everybody. I want to work with people. Again, I'm looking for the reason. Is that reason there? Are they at a place where they're really going to follow through with this? Because this is a comprehensive thing. I have a couple different varieties of what I do. I do a live seminar. I do a 90-day one-on-one program. But I want to know if that person really wants it. I want to know what their reasons are. And it's impossible for me to know that about everybody. But if I have a conversation with you, we interview each other, and I look at your questionnaire, and there's enough there, we're going to go for it. We're going to take a shot. We're going to do it. And whatever the results are, we'll praise progress or we'll tweak and go on from there.
So at what point did you discover that you could actually turn this into your livelihood?
My belief. I believe that I hit a tipping point. And I told you about passive discovery. I was on a journey that I didn't know. And, you know, if you read Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, right? Something clicked in my brain. And I hit a tipping point and my belief said, I can do that. It just took me a longer time to get there. And I think a lot of people may be in that somewhere. Where are they? Where are they between, you know, I don't know what I want. I can't do this too. There's that tipping point. I can do this. I can do this. And that's what happened. I just hit that tipping point. And then it was almost like the name, just everything was inspirational about it. The name Free Will Dream, get your mind free so you can pursue your dream. And then a friend of mine said, hey, did you look at your acronym? FWD, move forward. It's about moving forward with your life, moving forward with your highest aspirations and your dream.
And so step one for you was to do what? When you decided to hang out the shingle and start attracting clients, what was the first thing that you did?
For me, I literally went out. I want this to grow organically. I want people to get results, which they are, and then go out and talk about it. And then also funnel in the traditional marketing means, but I just went out and started to help people. It just grew out of me. I put myself through it to get to the point where I could launch it. So I went through all the steps myself. You want to practice what you preach. And then I started to share it with other people. And I didn't even go take people through the entire program at first. I took them through different elements of the program and people just started to get results. It was amazing. Just the belief level. Once you blow the lid off what's possible, like I said, you don't have to force people. I talk about force versus flow. We can force ourselves to work, which we need to do occasionally. But if you get into flow from inspiration, now you're working out of a different space. Now it's like you get up in the morning and it's just this flow. You want to get into what you're doing. You don't have to force yourself to do it.
And so your dream for you and the business, what does it look like in 5 years?
5 years, I want to, I just had a number, and I hope I blow this number. This is a low number. I want to help 10,000 people fulfill their life dream. That was my number. And I also want to be more live speaking. I want to do more live group events. I'm doing an event on February 6th with my partner. This is going to be more about the dream relationship. My partner, Joanna Kleinman, she's a psychotherapist, and she has a center called for the Extraordinary, Center for Extraordinary Relationships. And she does a program on dethroning the inner critic. So we're going to join up on February 6th, and we're going to talk about dream relationship, because the quality of your life is the quality of your relationships. And that's a key point, and it's right around Valentine's Day. It's a great time to do it. So we're shifting gears a little bit, and we're going to do that.
Fantastic. What else should we mention that we haven't had a chance to cover yet?
I would say that, here's what I say to everybody. If something I said resonate with you, you can certainly reach out to me, but do something. I don't care if it's me or somebody else, do something. Life is happening. It's moving. Life is happening. With John Lennon said, life is happening when you're making other plans. Go out and do something. Start to seek. Get into active discovery for yourself. Start to open up your mind. Believe more is possible. Don't worry about figuring out. Feel it and move forward. And that's what I say to people. Just do something to move forward. FWD, move forward.
Move forward. Austin Haynes, Free Will Dream. Thanks for stopping by The Build.
Joe, it was great to be here, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up again.
Fantastic. The Build is a production of 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Our producer is Lori Taylor. Our associate producer is Katie Cohen-Zonizer. Our talent coordinators are Katrina Smith and Gazem Yali. And our post-production team is led by Evan Wilder at Flowly Audio in Detroit. My name is Joe Taylor Jr. Thanks for listening to The Build.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Build. We hope you'll share this series with your friends and provide us with feedback on the iTunes Store. You can also subscribe to weekly updates and learn more about upcoming guests by visiting our show page at thebuild.biz. This has been a 2820 radio production.